Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Andrew Doman, political reporter at the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, Tovin Lapan, also a reporter at the Sun, is off today. Joining us today is Hector Barreto, chairman of the Latino Coalition and former administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration under President George Bush. Barreto also does work for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Workforce Fairness Institute. He's here today to chat about the economy, what works for small businesses, taxes, immigration, and a whole host of other issues. Hector, welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. It's great to be here.
Well, first of all, I guess we'll just want to chat a little bit about the Latino Coalition, which you're currently the chairman of. Now, the Latino Coalition has been advocating for the passage of federal immigration reform. Why is that a big issue for you?
Well, it's a very big issue. But let me also describe what Latino Coalition is. The Latino Coalition is a nationwide organization, been working in the community for three decades now. It's composed of 65 Hispanic organizations or centers of influence. We have a database of over 1 million Hispanic businesses. And our three big issues are economic development, especially as that relates to our small businesses, and also jobs. That's very important. Second issue that we really focus a lot of attention on is healthcare. And of course, everybody's talking about healthcare these days. The third issue is education. And so those are the three top priorities. Now, we do get involved in other issues like immigration, but those three that I just mentioned, economics, education, healthcare, those are by far the most important ones. But obviously, we get involved with issues like immigration because we believe, as many other leaders do, that we have a broken immigration system, and it's been broken for a long time. And this isn't about one party or the other. It's just about having a solution that works for business, that works for communities, that works for what we're going to need in the future to be competitive. And so we have, for years, worked on immigration issues. We're not advocating a particular piece of legislation. We were encouraged when earlier this year, on a bipartisan basis, there was a bill that came out of the Senate. We knew that bill was going to need to be changed in the House, and we're very hopeful that the House, hopefully before the end of the year, is able to do something. I don't think they're going to do anything on a comprehensive basis. In other words, I don't think it's going to be a big bill, but we need to start making some progress. And again, this isn't just an Hispanic issue. This is an economic issue. This is an issue that benefits everybody in this country, and it's something that we've got to fix if we're going to be able to grow as an economy and a country in the future.
So can you kind of connect the dots for me with the idea that we have millions of folks who are in the country illegally, finding some pathway to citizenship for them? Why is that a business issue?
Well, it's a business issue for lots of reasons. One is a lot of those people work for business, and businesses don't want to be put in a position where they may be hiring somebody that doesn't have legal status. It's an issue because many of those folks have been here for years. And the truth of it is, and a lot of people know this, whether they admit it or not, when this country is not going to gather up 12 million people and send them out of this country. First of all, I don't think this country could do it. Second of all, it would cost trillions of dollars if we even had the fortitude to be able to do that. So we have to deal with reality. We have 12 million people that live in the United States, that live in the shadows, that have families here, have homes here, have businesses here, and yet they're not able to fully contribute to this country. Many of them are not official businesses. They may not be paying federal income taxes. They may be paying a lot of other taxes, but they're not paying federal income taxes. So we want to take those 12 million out of the shadows. We want those people to be gainfully employed. We want those people to be making the contributions that they should be making. And we also understand that us kicking the can down the road and just pretending that they're not here or that somehow we're going to have a magic wand and come up with a solution for this, it's just not realistic. So that's why we think it's important that we deal with it once and for all. This is not a new issue. I mean, this is an issue that we were dealing with when I was in the Bush administration. We were trying to get comprehensive immigration reform passed then. And we couldn't do it then. And obviously, we see how difficult it is. But people come at this issue from lots of different standpoints. But again, what I think everybody agrees is we have a problem. Unfortunately, we don't have the political environment to be able to solve that problem. But it is something that's going to have to be dealt with and solved sooner than later.
Do you think the business community would withhold political contributions in the upcoming election to members of Congress who maybe aren't able to get this through or are obstructing?
I think business is very frustrated. You know, you mentioned I sit on the board of the United States Chamber of Commerce, and this is their top legislative priority. And so we're definitely going to strongly advocate to politicians on both sides of the aisle. And again, both of them have a stake in it, and both of them have responsibility, that this is something that we expect to happen. Look, you have folks like a former colleague of mine, Carlos Gutierrez, who's the former Secretary of Commerce, who's actually started a political action committee and is trying to raise millions of dollars to support those candidates that believe in immigration reform and will do something about it. So, yes, I think in the future you're going to see more accountability and more expectation that our leaders on both sides do the right thing and finally step up to the plate and fix this broken immigration system.
Sort of switch over here and ask you a few questions about education, because that's certainly been an issue in the state of Nevada, where people kind of get discouraged sometimes looking at some of our statistics, where we rank near the bottom on plenty of surveys looking at how various states are faring when it comes to education. Why is that such a focus for you at the Latino Coalition?
Again, it's a critical issue. First of all, the Hispanic community represents 50 million people, and a lot of our kids are in these school districts. You know, I live outside of Los Angeles. 70% of the kids in the LA Unified School District are Latino, but only 50% are graduating from high school. That's a big problem, not just for the Hispanic community, but for the general community as well. We know what happens when folks don't get a good education. They don't have the opportunities to be able to meet all of their promise. They're not gonna be able to get good jobs, start businesses, contribute to the economy. And oftentimes those folks, we also know that are gonna struggle, and they're gonna struggle and they're gonna need more assistance from government. So, you know, we think it's critically important. And we also believe that this is another one of those issues that we've got to really speak honestly. What's working and what's not working? A lot of times people will say, we just need to throw more money at it. We need more money. Well, my question is, how much of the money that we actually spend on education is really being spent on educating our kids? I mean, if all that money was going to educate the kids, I could say, okay, we do need to spend more money. But a lot of times you'll see where that's not happening. And so it's not just a question of throwing more money at the problem. It's figuring out what the problem is and coming up with some common sense strategies and solutions. But oftentimes, again, this issue gets very polarized, and you're not able to make the progress on it. And the people that suffer are our kids. And again, I'm talking about kids that we represent, the Latino community, but every community is affected by an education system that's not working.
And one of those things that you said, sort of these programs that sometimes appear to be common sense, Nevada is currently piloting programs for English language learners, and that's something that's new to the state and hasn't really been done before. But I wanted to ask you, how does language acquisition sort of play into economic and social development for the Latino community?
Critically important. I mean, my family were immigrants from Mexico, and my father came to the United States in the 1950s and didn't speak any English, and he went on to create some very successful businesses. He was the founder of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. He always taught us the importance of being bilingual, but he also knew, and my mother did too, that English and mastery of English was going to be critically important for us to be successful in this country. They weren't worried about us speaking Spanish. They know we'd learn Spanish at home, but when we went to school, when we went to work, we needed to be able to speak English. And so I don't think anything has changed. I think that that's still critically important. It's a skill that's very, very important. At the same time, I think it's great if you can speak more than one language. And in the United States, we're one of the few countries where that's not as much of a focus or as much of a priority. And I think in the future, as the world gets more interconnected, being able to speak more than one language is going to be very important.
So on that side, maybe we're seeing some need for more funding there, but perhaps on as you highlighted, there's really no point in throwing more money at a system that might not be totally well functioning. Where do you see that kind of waste in the education system?
Well, again, I'm not familiar with all of the particulars of the Nevada education system. I know that the governor is very focused on making sure that Nevada rises in the ranks. And every governor knows that, you know, if you're not training your population to be able to compete in the economy, not just now, but in the future, you're going to be left behind. There'll be less opportunities for the state, less opportunities for your community. So again, I learned this very early on, that education is a leveler of the playing field. If you have access to a good education, it doesn't matter if you were born into a family with a lot of money, but you will have opportunities in the future. And we've seen that over and over again. You know, the President of the United States says that. You know, the President of the United States didn't come from a wealthy family, but he had opportunities to get good education, and he was able to be able to succeed and to accomplish a lot of his personal career goals. And that's what we want for all kids. But again, I just think that there has to be a balance of, you know, is what we're doing right? If it's not working, then let's stop digging a hole. Let's figure some other things that we need to do. And everybody needs to be accountable in this situation. I mean, obviously, taxpayers fund the educational system, but they should also be getting a good product. They should be getting a good return on their investment. And when you don't see test scores going up, and when you don't see kids graduating from high school and going on to higher learning, I mean, that's a barometer. You know, there's an old saying, you get what you measure. And if we're measuring that, we're not getting very much.
You know, one of the things in Nevada that's probably going to be the biggest education issue in the upcoming year is kind of this debate that we've been talking about, Hector, is the issue of funding and the issue of reforms. There, the teachers union has got on the ballot in 2014 a 2% business margins tax, and the revenues from there would be deposited in an account that pays for schools. The tax would sort of hit anyone, any business grossing over $1 million a year. As a leader of a business organization, as well as someone who's involved in the Latino Coalition, what's your take on that proposal?
Well, I think that we need to be very careful. And, you know, there's this perception oftentimes that if you're a business and you're generating $1 million, you must be a millionaire. You must be making so much money that you're buying big houses and luxury items. And nothing could be farther from the truth. All right. You could be a restaurant that's generating $1 million in a year, and you're not wealthy at all. What people don't understand is when business, especially small business, and most business is small business, most of the money that you make goes right back into that business, hiring people, buying equipment, buying inventory, trying to expand. You put more taxes on those small businesses, they're not going to do any of those things. And we need small business to be the engine of the economy. That is the place that 2/3 of the net new jobs come from. Most of the innovation that we produce in this country comes from small business, but they're not going to be doing that if they feel everything's going to be costing them more. Right now, a lot of small businesses, and I say this because there are many small businesses that generate $1 million that are not wealthy, that are not doing well, that are going to be subject to these kinds of taxes. So I think we need to be very, very careful about what we do there. You know, small businesses need an environment where they're able not just to start, but to grow over the long term.
All right. And again, you're listening to Neon Eden. We're talking to Hector Barreto, chairman of the Latino Coalition. So Hector, we've been talking a little bit about education, a little bit about the economy. Here in Nevada, economic diversification is just this sort of the talk from the governor, from lots of people in the business community. And oftentimes we talk about big companies that are locating in Nevada, and that's sort of the stories that capture the attention of the press. But what role do small businesses play in economic diversification?
In the United States, small business represent 52% of the gross output of the U.S. economy. As I said, in most every state in the United States, 99% of every business is considered a small business. Small business is the place that net new jobs come from. They're not coming from government. They're not coming from large corporations. 2/3 of the net new jobs will come from small business. Small business is the place that innovation that makes our economy so productive comes from. You know, a lot of the technology and a lot of the new methods of doing business come from small business, not big business. Most businesses in the United States that export or import something are a small business. Something in excess of, you know, 70-80% of all businesses that are in international trade are small business, but they only represent about 30% of the trade dollars. So there's a real opportunity to grow that as well. So small business is crucial. You know, to be able to diversify your economy, you're not going to be able to depend on government, and you're not going to be able to depend on bigger businesses to fuel that. So it's incumbent upon every state and every government to create a very positive environment, to provide incentives, to work on different strategies that help those businesses not just get started, but to grow over the long term. I mentioned before, 50% of businesses go out of business in the first 4 years because they don't have something. You know, they don't have capital, or they don't have training, or they're not getting enough business, or things are starting to cost very much. By the way, small businesses vote with their feet. And if it becomes too expensive to do business in a particular community, a city, a county, a state, they move. They have to. I mean, that's usually their only choice. Not every business can move, you know, but a lot of them will. So I think it's very important. And I know Governor Sandoval is very focused on this. I've had conversations with him on that. We're talking about some strategies that we can help next year, bringing more opportunities to small businesses here in Nevada. I'd like to see Nevada businesses be able to sell more to the federal government. You know, the United States government has a goal every year to buy 23% of everything that they buy from a small business. By the way, that equates to $100 billion a year. I'd like to make sure that Nevada small businesses are getting their fair share of that $100 billion pie. And so those are some of the things that, you know, I'm going to be working on and trying to bring to our friends here in Nevada.
So Nevada does really well in business rankings compared to other states. When you look at the tax environment, we're a pretty low tax state. Recently there was a tech company that had started up here and then was scaling up a little bit and then moved to California, which from a tax perspective would seem sort of counterintuitive, higher taxes over in California, but they moved to Silicon Valley just to access, tap into all those tech entrepreneurs, all those highly skilled tech whizzes over there in Silicon Valley. So what else kind of factors in when we're talking about fostering small business development in a place like the Las Vegas Valley?
Yeah, I think obviously taxes are very important because that comes right off of with the revenues that you make for your company. But I mean, businesses are looking for other things too. And we kind of touched on some of these things earlier. They're looking for an educated workforce. You know, can they get the workers that they need for the business that they're in? They're looking for infrastructure. Can they get from point A to point B? How expensive is energy in your state? And do they really feel that the elected officials at every level are supportive of their business, or do they feel that they're under, attack by some of these elected officials? So, you know, there's a lot of things that they look at. I don't think they make a decision based on one thing. Every business is different. So, you know, in the case that you just alluded to, you know, it may have been less expensive for them from a tax base, obviously, you know, state tax. But if they weren't able to access the kind of talent that they needed to grow their business, they have to make a decision, and obviously they made a decision they needed to go someplace else. But, you know, that works both ways. There are other companies that, you know, see great opportunities here in the future. I mean, this is a tourist mecca. If you're in any kind of a tourist-related business, this is a great place to be.
That's right. You've done a lot of work, Hector Barreto, in the Hispanic community, and certainly there's a large Hispanic community here in Nevada. When it comes to small business, which you're also working on in the Latino Coalition, how does Nevada better foster sort of minority-owned businesses and that in Hispanics kind of creating small businesses? What can we learn from other states, perhaps?
Well, I think that there's always things that you can learn from other states. You know, I think our founding fathers wanted the states to be laboratories so that we could, you know, try out best practices and figure out what was working and try to implement that. And I think that's still relevant today. Latinos are very entrepreneurial. You know, I learned that at an early age from my father. He started several businesses. He started the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. So I got my entrepreneurial bug from him and from my mother and our family. Latinos are the fastest growing segment of small business in the United States. There are 3 million Hispanic-owned businesses, and they're in every state all across this country. Those businesses are already generating $500 billion in revenue. And the demographers that study these trends tell us that those numbers could double every 5 years. Which that translates to is in 10 years, we could have 12 million Hispanic businesses. In Nevada, it's a very growing Hispanic community. A lot of Hispanics have gone into, well, many Hispanics were involved in the construction industry. Obviously, that's a business that has slowed down since we had the downturn. Many of them are involved in the tourist industry. Many of them are in retail establishments. There are some that are going into manufacturing. A lot of them are interested in international trade, especially as it relates to their home countries or their countries of their relatives or forefathers. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. And you know, Hispanic businesses tend to be very resilient in the sense that, you know, they go ahead and start that business oftentimes before they have it all figured out. You know, a lot of communities that would say, well, until everything, I check all my boxes, I'm not going to start the business. And I understand that. You want to minimize risk. But a lot of times, you know, Latinos will charge forward, start their business, and kind of figure out the problems as they go along. And so I'm very bullish, obviously, on the Hispanic community. By the way, I mentioned the growth of the business community, but you also understand the consumer market has grown significantly. 50 million Latinos in the United States, over $1 trillion in purchasing power. So that's not only a good market for those Hispanic businesses, but for any kind of business.
Look, that point also sort of comes back to the education system, right? We know if someone's more educated, they're more likely to get a better job or perhaps have those skills to start a business and then spend that money back into the economy. So how does that factor in for you when you...
Well, listen, you know, I think, you know, it's a package, if you will. You know, my father and mother did not have a formal education. That didn't stop them from starting a small business. But they wanted to make sure that I had an education so that when I started my business, that I could take it farther than maybe where they could take it. So, you know, these are not, you know, mutually exclusive propositions. In other words, there are many small business people in the country that do not have formal educations, and they do very, very well because they're very good entrepreneurs. There's other people that have great educations and make terrible entrepreneurs. So it can kind of cut both ways. But if you have them both, if you dedicate yourself to an entrepreneurial pursuit and you have good skills and stuff, then the chances that you'll be successful grow exponentially. By the way, a lot of Hispanics start small businesses because they don't have those pathways. They're not going to get a corporate job. They're not a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. And so, you know, they create a small business basically to support their family. That's what my father did. I mean, my father's first jobs were very difficult, menial jobs. I mean, he picked potatoes for 50 cents an hour in rural Missouri. He worked on the railroad. He cleaned out the stalls in the meatpacking plant. He was a janitor at my school. But all during that time, he kept telling me that he was a businessman. And I could say, Dad, we don't have a business. And he would say, I'm going to have a business. I'm going to save my money. That's my dream. And he ended up accomplishing his dream and doing some phenomenal things that were really an inspiration to me. And that story gets played out over and over in many communities. Remember, we have 28 million small businesses in the United States.
And Hector, you just mentioned some of the jobs your father has had there, doing all sorts of different work. You've had many jobs in the past, and I'd like to talk a little bit about another group that you're working with, which is, I think, affiliated with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, but the Workforce Fairness Institute. Can you talk a little bit about what is that and what's the goal? What's your involvement?
Oh, well, I'm on the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, but I want to also clarify that U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Workforce Institute are separate entities, and there isn't actually a direct connection there. I think there's a confusion there because U.S. Chamber has a program called WFI, and I think a reporter mistook it for the Workforce Fairness Institute. But we think it's very important. Look, we work with many groups to foster a positive environment for businesses and employees. And, you know, one of the things that we learned about not too long ago is that, you know, there is an issue here with, I believe it's Culinary Union 226, who is actually in a battle with, some of the larger hotels. And, you know, those things happen. I mean, there's sometimes disputes and there's negotiating. But what really troubled us about this was some of the tactics that the union was taking, having these protests in front of the hotel and insulting tourists that were coming in and calling them names and being very aggressive. And we think that that is very destructive, not just for them, but for a lot of the union members. Obviously, it's something that affects tourism. You know, we don't want Las Vegas to get a black eye and for people to say, you know what, I'm not going to go to Las Vegas anymore because I don't want to be accosted by somebody on a picket line that we have nothing to do about. I would also tell you that there are members that we've heard of that are part of that union that are not happy and they're somewhat uncomfortable that a lot of their union leaders are taking these kind of aggressive postures. Now, please understand, we're not against unions. Unions have a role and they have a place. But when you do things like what we've heard of and what I believe is still continuing to this day, these protests are continuing, it's a bad thing for everybody. It's not just a bad thing for a hotel. And by the way, there are a lot of hotels here that do great things for their employees, provide great benefits, etc. So you can't paint every business with the same brush. But one of the other concerns I have is that, you know, a lot of times people will look at this and say, well, this is a labor dispute between a union who may be going beyond the pale in some of their tactics that they're taking and this large hotel. But what I would say is that it also affects small business because there's a lot of small businesses that sell products and services into these hotels. And if those businesses suffer, that redounds down to the small business. And the worst thing is that we don't want to see this to become a trend where, you know, Las Vegas turns into the next Detroit. You know, Detroit is bankrupt. And I would say to you that some of that has to do with some of the things that unions have been doing there for decades that really hurt the economy and forced people out. And we do not want that to happen in Las Vegas or Nevada. Tourism is the most important industry here. And when you hurt tourism, you hurt everybody. And so that's why we're here, to educate people, talk to business owners. I was at a breakfast this morning talking to a whole group of business owners that are really worried about this.
But Hector, you mentioned the Las Vegas, you don't want it to become the next Detroit. Detroit, of course, has had its own fiscal woes, but the issue at the culinary there is it's a private sector union with a private company. The situation in Detroit had a lot to do with the public sector, with the city and with government, right?
Well, it has to do with a lot of things. I mean, you know, what happened in Detroit didn't happen overnight. It happened over decades. But the point is still the same. There's a way to negotiate and a way to negotiate so that everybody wins. And there's a way to negotiate where you shoot yourself in the head. And that's what happened in Detroit. And that's what we don't want to happen here. And so when those protesters are out there yelling vulgarities, booing at tourists who are coming here from all over the world, who don't understand why they're being mistreated and stuff, that hurts everybody. It hurts the reputation of Las Vegas. It hurts that union and their union members. Obviously, it hurts the business. And as I told you, it's not just big business that gets hurt. If we saw this after 2008, when the economy imploded here in Vegas, and of course it was hurt all around the country, everybody suffered. Unemployment went up, businesses went out of business, less people were coming here. And so just now when we're starting to see signs that maybe we're taking a turn here, I think the worst thing that could happen is, again, this thing, you know, catches on and it grows. And it goes from one hotel to another. Other industries are affected. People don't want to come to Las Vegas anymore. Believe me, this is not just an issue that's being covered in Las Vegas. This has become national and international news. And so we're out talking to folks, making sure that they understand what the implications of some of these actions are. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that a union doesn't have the right and to be able to negotiate a contract, but this is not the way to negotiate.
That's kind of what I wanted to get at. At the end of the day, how do you feel about these workers who don't have a contract yet? Do you think they should?
Absolutely, they should have negotiated. And my understanding is that these negotiations have been going on. But I assume that what's happened now is that the union's not pleased or satisfied with the progress of those talks, and they decided to go to DEFCON 3 and blow everything up. By the way, we see this happening in Washington, D.C., where you have people on both sides of the aisle who are they're not interested in coming up with a solution. They just want to burn everything down. And that's what I hope is not happening here.
I sure hope not either. I wouldn't want to see Las Vegas end up like D.C. But that's all the time we have today. And you've been listening to Neon Eden, and we've been talking to Hector Barreto, chairman of the Latino Coalition. And thanks for joining me today, Hector.
Thank you very much.
All right. And for UNLV, our producer is Richard Riegel. For the Las Vegas Sun, I'm your host, Andrew Doman. See you next week on Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV.